The following program is intended for mature audiences.
He's standing in front of the net with about 8 inches of his shaft in his hand.
You're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports.
Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
And download every episode and more at basicallyasportsshow.com.
Now here's your hosts, Zach,
Greg,
Mike.
They are incompetent, the absolute worst.
And you're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
We can pick right up where we were talking off the air. I just wanted to know if we needed to start the recording or not.
Well,
I think we're going to talk a little Stanley Cup playoffs, I hope, right?
Yeah, I think all of our second round matchups have been set.
Yeah.
Some heartbreak, some triumph. Bruce Boudreau, to his credit, did not choke in a game seven, so that was nice.
No, he didn't even let the team get there. To his credit, when he told them that we're going to play like it's a game seven and game four, they won that game. So that's
a different approach for him.
Yeah. But then, you know, then they lose the next game. And then in the press conference afterwards,
he was a whiny bitch.
Well, he was a little angry. Yeah. He said things like we were the better team, but
okay,
we lost.
We've seen a lot of that going around lately with the Wild, that they're so good. And that they were the better team and all this other stuff. So if that's the case, why did they lose in five games?
Jake Allen.
Is it that simple, though?
Kind of.
Okay.
The Minnesota Wild outshot them pretty much every game. The face-off ratios were great. They were driving the play for the most part. Jake Allen just came up with a great series. It happens, you know. It's not anything to fault the Wild for necessarily. It certainly happens.
But here's my issue with the whole "the Wild are really good" argument. Yeah. But for all the talk about how they shut down the Blues' top players, they didn't shut down the Blues offense enough to keep them from scoring more goals than them, and out shooting your opponent is a nice metric, but it's really not all that meaningful if you're going to start looking at scoring chances, not shots, because every shot is a scoring chance.
I was just going to say, you could theoretically just fire off shot after shot after shot and you know, really run up your shot totals, but they're not going to be good shots. Like you said, Mike, they're not scoring chance shots. They're just, you know, you're firing at the net and trying to get a shot out of it. I mean, I'm not saying that's what they were doing, but I'm with you. I don't think that just having more shots is necessarily an indication that you played better. And I learned that from playing NHL video games. I used to just like fire, you know, bang, bang, bang. And, you know, and it turned out, well, no, if you try to set up and actually try to score goals, it works a lot better.
Right.
I just think the Wild, and maybe you're right, maybe it is just Jake Allen, but I look at that team, okay, and they've got Zach Parise, right?
Uh-huh.
And they've got Martin Hansel, who scores 20 goals a year sometimes. And what else?
Well, they traded for him at the end of the season.
I know.
They've got that
Eric Saul had a good season. Ryan Suter.
Suter, Mikko Koivu is there. Yeah.
Okay, I forgot about Koivu. But my point is, though, I mean, are any of those guys, though, and maybe I'm going to phrase this incorrectly, but all those guys strike me as a complimentary player. As in, they're a good player, but they're not the guy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think Mikko Koivu is the guy in a different sense. He's not your leading scorer, but he can be a top-line center.
Is he like a facilitator type center where he sets, you know, like a more of an assist center than a scoring, you know, like a goal-scoring center type thing?
He's more of a setup guy, and he is nominated for the Selke Trophy for best defensive forward. So that's something that usually goes along with being one of the top centers in the league, because the guys that have won it are the Patrice Bergerons, the Jonathan Taves, Pavel Datsyuks, those type of players.
Speaking of Jonathan Taves, can I get this in before I forget?
Mm-hmm.
I was watching Leafs Caps last night. Sorry, Mike. Mm-hmm. And I got the biggest kick out of the Patrick Kane commercial where he's going to score the game-winning goal. The Gatorade commercial.
Oh, the Gatorade commercial. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, That's great. You got eliminated in four straight games, and your team barely
scored. I said that exact same thing when I saw that commercial.
It's like,
is that something you really want to keep playing? Well,
you might have wanted guys that are still playing to, you know, do those spots and do it with multiple players.
They did that before, and it's Gatorade. They're going to pick one guy. And to Gatorade's credit, too, they also picked Paul George of the Pacers for their NBA version of that commercial.
Yeah.
And they're playing the Cavaliers in the first round, so good luck.
And George literally missed a game-winning shot right before they went to that commercial.
Yeah. we'll get to that. We'll get to the Blackhawks in a minute because that was juicy. But I just want to look at the game scores for the series. Mm-hmm. So game one is a 2-1 St. Louis win in overtime. Mm-hmm. 2-1, not exactly blowing the doors off anybody. Game two, 2-1 St. Louis. I believe they scored late in that game to take that one also. Game three, St. Louis wins 3-1, and I think they scored an empty netter to get the third goal. Game four, Minnesota wins 2-0. Game five, all of a sudden, they forgot to play defense, and it's a 4-3 game that's won in overtime by St. Louis. So it's not like the Wild played fine defensively, and Devin Dubnyk was okay. The Wild just were shut down by Jake Allen, and I don't know if I don't have like Vladimir Tarasenko's stats in front of me, but I don't remember the Blues top guys really making a big impact in this one.
No, they didn't, but they still found other ways to score. And I guess
like the Blues leading scorer was Jaden Schwartz with 2 goals, 5 points total. And he's a nice player, but he's not.
Okay, that's all well and good, but I'm still not buying into the argument that's going on right now that this team is a lot better than we think they are.
No, I think
they're exactly as good as I think they are, which is where they ended up.
Exactly. Right. Well, which is something else that I need to discuss. Yes, a hot goalie can certainly steal a playoff series, but even granting that, I don't know that a team can lose a series 4-1 and then claim, nah, we were the better team.
No.
Like you don't go out in 5 games and claim you. Like maybe you can get away with that in a close 7-game series, but sure, not going out in 5.
Well, like the goal the Caps scored last night against the Leafs. You know, it was kind of a little bit on the fluky side. And okay, if you're in a tight 7-game series and that's the way that it ends, and you lose on a fluky goal, you can make the argument we were the better team. We just didn't get the bounces. But I don't know if the Wild can make that case. They lost in five games.
Here's my counter to that. I think 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whenever the Ducks played the Winnipeg Jets in the first round,
mm-hmm.
the Ducks ended up sweeping that series. But mm-hmm. it could have been very different because after 3 games, the Ducks were up 3-0, and they had led in total for like 30 seconds, 40 seconds.
That's true.
And so if the puck bounces the other way and all of a sudden Winnipeg is up 3-0, but the Ducks are the better team.
We're
the better team, but we've been losing the games on a bad bounce or, you know, their goalies is playing out of their mind. It happens sometimes. So I can see where the Wild might be the better team. But I think the Wild are better than the Blues over the course of like a long season. And even if Jake Allen's not at his best, this is still like a 6 or 7 game series, though. I think the Wild are better than the Blues, but not demonstratively so, as some people are trying to say.
I think they're like the Blue Jackets. I made this comparison at the start of the playoffs. I think they're like the Blue Jackets. I think they were a very good regular season team. But when you look at them, when it comes time to play a 7-game series, I just look at them and I go, I don't know. And even against St. Louis, I picked them to beat St. Louis because I thought, okay, St. Louis, you know, not having one of their – they just didn't – well, they're the Blues. I mean, that's the best way I can put it.
Well, the Blues fired their coach and traded away their best player before the season was really over. So I don't think anyone was wrong to think that maybe they had given up on the season.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, but I just thought that the Wild would get past them, but that would be as far as it would go. But I just – you know, I'm okay with them saying that they're a good team. They are a good team. But this nonsense that, you know, they're Stanley Cup contenders and all that, no, they're not.
Oh, well, that's coming from some delusional fans.
I
said that they were the better team, which based on certain things you could argue maybe, but to say that they're like on the cusp of a dynasty or
they're
something
not.
Like that.
They're not.
No,
this group has shown exactly what their peak is. And they're a very good team. They can be a very good team, but they've reached their ceiling when it comes to what they are. They're at best a second round team every year. That's
exactly
it.
This team's ceiling is playoff mediocrity. And look, yes, Jake Allen had a tremendous series, and I don't want to take that away from him.
Jake Allen, a .956 save percentage.
Yeah, I saw that guy make some saves that were just out of this world. He was incredible.
I think I saw a stat where, like, if you add up all the shots the Wild had over the course of five games, Jake Allen stopped 152 out of 157. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
But even if we say that, okay, why is it that we have to make an excuse every time the Wild have this big explosion of mediocrity and battle to the playoffs? In the past, we always blamed their coach. It was their coach's fault. He was the one who was holding this core back.
Yeah, well, they played that boring style of hockey. Yeah, okay.
And then, you know, so we blame the coach. They bring Boudreaux in, and now it's Jake Allen. Like, this has happened twice. I think the common denominator isn't the coaching necessarily, although getting Bruce Boudreaux to help you win in the playoffs probably wasn't the smartest move. But even that aside, the common denominator just has to be maybe this core just doesn't have what it takes.
No, I agree with that.
That's my take.
Their other problem in previous playoff series was the fact that they played the Blackhawks like 4 years in a row.
Yeah, that makes it tough, too.
That's the other big problem.
It's actually kind of like how the original Winnipeg Jets in the 80s kept running into the Gretzky Whalers in the playoff.
Yeah, good luck with that, huh?
Yeah. Thanks for showing up.
I remember 1 year the Wild had a dominant first-round series. Like, they were the team that upset the Blues 1 year. It was like, oh, well, maybe the Wild will give the Blackhawks a shot. No, they got swept. I think they got swept the first two times they played.
I remember that, and everyone was like, oh, man, I can't wait for Minnesota-Chicago. It's going to be awesome this year. And then it was like, Chicago in four. And everyone was like, oh.
I think the Wild are a good team. I just don't think that they are a next-level team yet. And I don't know that this core is going to be that next level. I think you guys are right. They've hit their ceiling. This is about as good as they're going to get. Now, can they bring in some more players? And maybe, who knows? But as they stand today, they're not there. Because let's be honest about it. Let's say that they do get past the Blues. Does anybody see them knocking out Anaheim? Or I'm not even going to say Edmonton. I just don't see it.
Well, they would have had to play Nashville.
Or Nashville for that
movie. Hell out of Chicago, which was...
Yeah.
So, I look, Minnesota, the thing with them, too, is, yeah, sure, they might have some nice young prospects, but none of them seem like they're the next-level types.
Right.
And as it goes, your Mikko Koivus, your Zach Parises, your Ryan Suters are getting older than younger, quicker. And, you know, their big acquisition in the offseason last year was Eric Staal, who it was like, Eric Staal, really? This is a joke. He's not going to do anything. He had a decent season, but he's not going to do what he did this year again. Like, no. He's going to come back down. Devin Dubnyk is eventually going to go back to being what he was.
That's my next point. Yeah, Dubnyk had a couple of good seasons in a row, but let's be honest again. Is he up there with Lundqvist, or I'll even say Bobrovsky, Corey?
You can say this.
Carey Price? No.
I'll even say this. Devin Dubnyk is a solid goalie, but here's the problem that Minnesota had with him, is that he is, okay, if you look back at, say, the heyday of the New Jersey Devils, over the course of an 82-game season, they could ride Brodeur for like 78 of those and be perfectly fine for the playoffs because Brodeur was just a beast. Dubnyk isn't, and yet the Wild ground him to dust by overusing him this season.
Wait a second, Mike. Are you trying to tell me that a Bruce Boudreaux coach team had a goalie usage issue?
That is exactly what I am suggesting.
That's balderdash, Mike. I cannot accept that as a reason.
But I just think that the Wild, I think they're a fine team, but I just don't see the next level guys on that team. Maybe you go out and get someone, I don't know, but... And look, God bless the ones that are that fanatical about them, that they think that they're great, and good for you that you're that dedicated and everything. But sometimes you've got to take off the blinders and see what's really there. And I don't know that what some of these people are seeing is just not there.
What did you guys think of the Bruce Boudreaux faux pas on the handshake line?
I don't know what he did.
He he shook hands with the other coaching staff on the bench, but as soon as he did that, he went back to the locker room. Normally, the coaches go back to the end of the players' line and shake the hands of all the players. He, as far as I knew, he shook hands every time in Anaheim because I saw all four of them. anyway, I don't know. It's
I wish other sports would do that. I think that's a cool, it's a classy touch.
He seemed to take this one a little bit harder than even any of the Ducks series.
Yeah, so I've never seen him so animated before.
Well, I've seen him animated, but he was angry.
The Blues weren't favored going into the series, right?
No.
And they, no. I mean, again, you know, like Mike said, okay, you know, the hot goalie, you go down in seven games. That's a little easier to stomach, but they got their butts kicked. I mean, on the scoreboard, at least. I mean, they lost in five.
Yeah.
That's hard to deal
with. Something else that someone pointed out, that going back to 2014, the Wild have lost, the Wild have won less and less playoff games each and every year since 2014.
Hmm.
Like, last year they went out in the first round six. This year they went out in the first round five.
Yeah, so, well.
I mean, that's not exactly progressing towards the cup, okay. Is it?
Okay, here's the stat line. 2014, they lost six games in the second round. 2015, they got swept in the second. 2015 got swept in the second round. I think that was the Chicago year.
Yeah.
2016, lost in six games in the first round. 2017, lost five games in the first round. So, you know, there's progression here, but I'm not sure it's in the right direction. And yeah, this core is just it has done what it's going to do. And I don't even think that you need to blow them up necessarily. I think you can retool things on the fly, and the team is talented enough, and Boudreau's a good enough regular season coach that you won't see diminishing returns during the regular season. But they really do need to consider at least moving some pieces around, because I remember when Parise signed with them, that was right after his very strong showing in the 2010 Olympics, right? It was like right around then. And when he signed with the Wild, everyone suddenly was like, well, there you go, Western Conference representatives in the Stanley Cup. And people, and obviously a lot of that's just hype, but people had high expectations for him. And look, they're not unique. You can go back. You can look at the San Jose Sharks or the Washington Capitals. There are talented teams out there that have talented cores that, for whatever reason, their ceiling is just lower than it probably should be. And I think this is a case of that.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of a team that got just completely shut down by a goaltender, let's talk about the team the Wild or the Blues will be playing, the Predators. Sweep the Blackhawks.
Now, before we start on this, I have a question about it. Would the Preds have been the actual, like, if we'd gone with the old seeding, would they have still been the number 8 seed?
Yeah, in the West, things happen to work out where,
okay,
had we done the old seeding, the matchups in the first round would be exactly what we would have had.
So this literally was an 8 taking down a 1 then. It wasn't just like, because, you know, like we had the Rangers and the Habs play. They were like a point apart, you know.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, it didn't look.
No.
This is an actual legit. Okay.
Technically speaking, even though it's not an 8 playing a 1, technically it's the first time an 8 seed has ever swept a number 1 seed ever.
They sure did that.
Yeah. The numbers you want to take out of the series, Pekka Rinne, a 976 save percentage.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the fact that the leading scorer for the Blackhawks was Jonathan Toews with 2 points. Pekka Rinne had 2 points in the series.
Well, another thing to look at, too, is Rinne's save percentage is 20 points higher than Jake Allen's, who we were just talking about being the hot goalie at, what, 954 or something, and Rinne's up there at 970-something. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, he let in 3 goals to the Chicago Blackhawks for 4 games. That's nuts. The first game, okay, Nashville gets a bounce in the first period. Pekka Rinne has a great game. It's a 1-0 game. Okay, it's still kind of close. Then the second game, Rinne's still just as good. Nashville finds more offense, and it's a 5-0 in Chicago. Those are
The
series was won right there in those two games.
Yeah, they beat Chicago. They shut them out twice in Chicago. I don't know where you go from there.
6-0 in those two games. Then, game three rolls around. Chicago goes up 2 goals. It's like, okay, here, the Blackhawks are back. Things are going to be fine. They're going to run through these next four games, and we will forget that Nashville ever existed. Nashville has a comeback, wins the game in overtime. Then they just make quick work of them in game four, really.
Well, I think the game three comeback was what completely and totally broke Chicago's back.
Of course, yeah.
When they couldn't, you know, fire up the T-1000 and do their thing that they'd been doing for so long, and that didn't happen. Because usually the Blackhawks are the team that does that. You get up a couple goals, and they come back, and they rip your heart out. And it happened to them. And I think that was the total backbreaker. I think by that point, it didn't matter what was going to happen. They were going to lose that series.
This was particularly interesting because, as we've pointed out before on the show, Pekka Rinne, very talented goalie, but he's actually had a bit of a down season by his standards.
Yep.
So it's biscuits and gravy, man.
God.
Yeah, no, he had a down season, but I don't know where – like even last year when the Preds beat the Ducks, Rinne was okay, but he wasn't the reason that the Predators beat the Ducks. There was 100 different reasons why that happened, but he put – you know, his foot down early on in the series, kept Chicago off the board. And Nashville just is one of those teams that is clicking at the right time, you know, and it's one of those things you don't want to see if you're another team that has to go against them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Knowing what we've seen at Pekka Rinne the last couple of years, that 976 won't stay up. Like,
No.
Especially now that they've had some time off, you know, the rest versus rust thing. I think the Predators is definitely a team that would have liked to keep playing, like, right away.
And from a goalie's perspective, you definitely want to keep playing if you're on a hot streak. You don't want any downtime.
Like that in any sport. I mean, no matter what, if you're hot, the last thing you want is a long break. Because it's just... too many things can happen, but so they've got the Preds now. Will take on the Blues, right?
Yeah, that's a series that's going to be just a string of 2-1, 3-1 games. It's going to be pretty low scoring, I think.
If you're a fan of goalie work, this should be fun, though.
Right, you got the two hot goalies from the first round facing off in the second round,
mm-hmm.
With Jake Allen and Pekka Rinne. A lot of blue, a lot of yellow to see this series.
You know what? Nashville should be disqualified for all of the yellow. Like,
yeah.
It's too much.
The posts on the glass, that's just a step too far for me. That looks ridiculous.
The gold helmets are too much, too. Like, that's the first place to start. I've seen a few games in Nashville, obviously, you know, on TV and whatever, but having watched just the playoff games with everything else, it's too much. It's really, really too much.
How do they draw? My girlfriend was asking me about this today.
Apparently pretty well.
Okay.
For what they are.
Yeah. They're not like the hottest ticket in Nashville or anything, but they've got a very dedicated niche that they do well for themselves. Yeah,
it was one of those existential moments where I was like, "Why does Jacksonville have a hockey or Jacksonville Nashville have a hockey team?"
That just hit me. Still, like, a very good question.
Yeah, and then I went. I mean, while we're at it, why does Columbus have one?
The Predators were a heartbeat away from moving to Hamilton for a minute, if you remember,
mm-hmm.
the Jim Balsillie, a BlackBerry guy, controversy at the time.
Yes.
But it was kind of like right after that happened, when it was like, oh, we almost lost the Predators. That's when people kind of came out and said, we really need to support this team and to make sure that this sort of stuff doesn't happen again.
Well, I remember a lot of the country music stars were doing promos and stuff and showing up at games and all that other stuff. And yeah.
Well, the thing that happened was they had an owner who wanted out, and Balsillie was
Biagio.
But Balsillie was the guy who, you know, offered him the money as the out.
Yeah. By the way, if in the long line of just quality NHL ownership, if you ever get the time, look up stories of Boots Del Biagio.
Isn't he in jail?
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
But anyway, after the Balsillie, after the NHL shot down the Balsillie bid because they didn't want a team in Hamilton, they found some local owners who were not just content to own the team. They actually did put in a lot of work to market them and get them out. So, yeah, that is a case where it actually did work out. My only real problem with the Predators fan base is one, I think they're, you know, no singing the national anthem thing, no singing during the national anthem thing is a bit silly.
Well, it's not the singing, it's because they're tired of all the Blackhawks fans that come in.
The Blackhawks,
you know, cheer straight through the national anthem, because that's just what they do in Chicago.
That's
what they like.
I don't see the problem, but whatever. Anyway, that's the thing that really that I really don't like is apparently they like to chant "fuck you" during games.
Yeah, they do that. They did what
What's
they
wrong
used
with
to
that?
Do. Well, what they still do, they changed the goal song to try and just discourage us from going on. Mm-hmm. But before their goal song starts off with a clip of "I like it, I love it."
Tim McGraw song.
Right, but they got him to re-record where it says, you know, "Don't know what it is about that little gal's loving." They changed it is to "Don't know what it is about the Predator scoring." They play that, and then they would play the rock and roll song part two, which the Predators fans went kind of intermittently go, it'd be "Da-na, hey, you suck. Da-na, hey, you suck. We're going to beat the hell out of you, you."
Yeah, that's what it was. Not "fuck," sorry.
So then they changed the song to a song by the Black Keys called "Gold on the Ceiling," which is actually a really good song. So the Predators fans were like, "No, you're not going to make us change our goal song routine." So they found a way to like work it back in. They still do it anyway. And then there's like this section of fans that have like dubbed themselves like Cell Block 422 or whatever the hell it is. And they try to do like the college hockey thing and do chants during the game. But in my experience with Predators fans, having played them in a couple playoff series, I find them to be tryhards. They're really trying to let you know, like, "Hey, we like hockey, and we're going to show you how much we like hockey." It's like, all right, guy, just enjoy the game.
Speaking of songs, when's the last time that the Chicago Blackhawks were in the playoffs and we did not hear Chelsea Dagger a single time?
Oh, it's a good year. It's a good year is what it is.
And I've found, too, that the hockey thread on the boards is surprisingly bereft of Blackhawks fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a whole lot of talk going on there.
Nope, I noticed that, too. You know, it's one of those things where when the team's losing, they just don't really show up. Andy gave a good soliloquy on his Facebook about the end of the Blackhawks season. But, you know, that's about as much as I saw.
I stopped following him during the World Series last year, and I forgot to refollow him after it was over. We made a deal with each other. He's like, "Okay, I'm not going to follow you just for this." I'm like, "Yeah, fair enough. I'll see you in a week." And then I never refollowed him after that. Sorry. I'll get back to that, but Andy. Yeah. I'll fix it tonight.
Blackhawks are out, and they might have some issues. They might have some issues going forward because they have a lot of money tied up in a little bit of players.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what their issue is in all the years where like they would win the cup and they'd have to get rid of guys because they had to pay people. And so over time, they've tied up all their money in Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Nicholas Hjalmarsson, and Artemi Panarin's extension kicks in next season. So they have like, I think it was like $40,000 or $40 million tied up in like eight players, which means they have like $20 million to fill out the rest of the roster.
Well, they had to cut loose Brandon Saad. Now, granted, he's not like a Toews or a Kane, but he's a pretty damn good player.
Right.
And they had to let him go because of money issues. Yeah.
After the first cup, they had to let Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien go, and it's always somebody. And so they've been filling it in with kind of these young guys and these guys that are – I think they said there's like eight guys that are making under $1 million on the roster right now. Mm-hmm. And it's just like you can only use those replacement-level players for so long before it's like that's where the problem is. Chicago got beat the hell on their fourth and third lines and on their bottom D pairing. And Nashville just feasted on it. And you know, nobody looked at it at the time, but something that the Blackhawks even brought up in some of their exit interviews, they said, like, You know, we looked at our standings. You know, if you look at the standings, they were the top team in the West, but the regulation wins were less. Like, I think they only had two more regulation wins than the Predators did in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And so Patrick Kane was somebody that said, we probably thought a little bit too high of ourselves based on where we were in the standings. We weren't as good as, you know, we thought we were.
Yeah.
And also, I think they need to start. I think they also need to honestly start addressing a goalie situation. Corey Crawford might be getting to the end of his run.
Yeah, Crawford was a .902 save percentage in the series. Not good.
No. I mean, he's on the north side of 30, and it's, you know, it's time to start thinking about moving on from that.
Yeah. But I'm like Greg said, I'm not shedding any tears for the Blackhawks.
No.
But I think, you know, they said that, oh, there's going to be changes, and they fired an assistant coach. But they have so much money tied up in so many players, and all those players have no move clauses. So they're going to be stuck like this for a bit.
Yeah, because my next question. Do you bite the bullet and say, okay, we're going to move one of these guys to clear up some room? And
they're going to have to at some point.
But if they've got like no trade clauses or whatever, then it's like the Marlo Thornton situation in San Jose. You're just stuck.
Yeah. Well, like even one conversation that I heard, somebody said, well, Patrick Kane would be a guy that you could get a lot of assets for, right? It's not like they would ever want to trade him necessarily, but I think if they had to choose between Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, they'd probably get rid of Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
For many reasons. and because he has a no trade clause, they said, well, where's the only place you could send him?
Buffalo.
Back to his hometown, Buffalo. And does Buffalo doesn't have what they would want to give there? And this is still based on whether or not he would say, yeah, sure, trade me. Or, you know,
it's
a hard spot to be in.
Buffalo has recently, you know, named, you know, Jack Eichel player GM. So who knows how that works.
GM, head coach, captain.
Oh,
owner.
So he's the LeBron James of the Buffalo Sabres, basically, then.
Basically, yes.
Nice.
Yeah, he says, you know, he denied that he said these things, but he said something to the effect of, if Dan Bylsma is the head coach, I'm not signing an extension here. And then, you know, the next day, Dan Bylsma and the GM were both fired.
Wow.
So, you know.
I don't like that. That's, you know.
But Jack Eichel had a press conference. Said I didn't say these things. You know, I don't want to be that player. I'm not that player.
Sounds like, to me well, like you might be a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit, Jack. Just a little bit. But yeah, Blackhawks.
So what do we like?
Blackhawks are still going to be a very good team, but they're going to be a team that if they're going to win the cup, it's just going to have to be one of those years where things break right for them, or they get the hockey.
They aren't quite as scary, and they get a little less scary every year.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still think, though, if you could find a way to do it, I would. I mean, I don't know if the fans would be so crazy about it, but if you can get like a Toews or a Kane or somebody and really bring a haul in, I would have to take a look at it.
Because
no matter what, these guys aren't going to play forever.
No.
You know, so if you can do it, do it. But that's for something for the offseason.
Yeah, and I couldn't imagine, you know, being the guy that has to go, hey, Jonathan Toews, so you've been a real good soldier for us. You won us 3 Stanley Cups. You're the captain. You're everything that we want in a player.
But
think of the trading.
That's why you do it with Kane.
Well, yeah. That's why you do it with Patrick Kane, or you hope that, you know, Brent Seabrook says, oh, I'm too old. I'm going to retire now.
Well, you know, I mean, just on Kane for just a second, that was another thing that surprised me about that Gatorade commercial. It's like, really?
Yeah, that wasn't like, really Gatorade? Out of, like, is this the guy?
Yeah.
It's surprising how fast people were willing to get rid of that. Because he's been in a cup. Do you remember the NHL All-Star commercials? Where they were like,
they
were cutting a trailer for the All-Star game, and like they had all these players say lines from movies. And the line that they had Patrick Kane use was, say hello to my little friend.
Oh, my God.
And it was like, for the guy that was accused of sexual assault, that's not what he wanted to say. But they did that. He's in this Gatorade commercial. He's in stuff for the NHL. He's the most prolific American scorer by the end of his career. He'll probably be the best American player of all time. Just what do you do?
What? No love for Mike Modano?
Mike Modano is right now. Yeah. But I mean, Patrick Kane has three Stanley Cups.
Well, and if you know, it's not like they
give the United States the international glory somewhere.
It's not like they don't research these things either. It's not like they just said, we'll take Kane, bring him over for Gatorade spot. I mean, they knew. They checked into it, and it must the reputation thing must not be an issue, or they don't ever use them. I mean, they're not stupid. I mean, they're kind of stupid, but they're not that stupid, right?
Or it's one of those things where, like, everyone knows he's kind of a jerk, but they still buy his jersey.
Yeah.
And they still, like, know who he is.
Well,
and they know Blackhawks, and they say, oh, well, Gatorade, that's the drink for me.
You know, those people probably already have, though, a St. Paddy's Day Kane jersey, so...
Yes.
But anyway, on to the series itself. So we've got the Preds and the Blues.
Preds Blues.
Yeah,
like I said, probably a low-scoring series. And I don't know who I want to pick in this. As a Ducks fan, should we advance the Western Conference Final? I don't want to play the Predators again. I just don't want to deal with that. But maybe I don't know. Are they the better team?
I think that right now your Ducks, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think they've got the easiest path to the finals I've seen so far since we started doing this show.
Well, yeah,
it's easy, but this is the one that you look at and go, they really shouldn't have a problem getting there.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about them in a second, but you look at the Western Conference Final Four, one of the Predators, Blues, Oilers, or Ducks are going to be in the Stanley Cup Final. That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Group to be like, yeah, one of these four is going to be a cup finalist. Not the Blackhawks. It's not the Kings. Even the Sharks. It's none of these teams of even the last few years. It's Preds, Blues, Oilers, Ducks.
Would be happy with any one of those four. I have no problem with any one of the four making it.
Yeah.
Could it be my St. Louis Blues finally break through and do it this time? No.
No, because I think even if the Blues get by the Predators, I think that even the Oilers could beat the Blues.
Yeah,
if that's what it comes to, it's gonna be a weird couple rounds out here in the West.
And you know what else is gonna start up now too is all the ratings bullshit talk now. The NHL wants, you know, this is gonna be awful. Whatever, this is what they got. You got to deal with it.
Mike's dream conference final, still alive, or Stanley Cup final, Nashville, Ottawa in the conference.
Yeah. I'm kind of like the people.
Mike Fisher Cup.
How about like Edmonton, Ottawa? Come on.
I'm like the opposite. Like, I'm like people who talk about the cup finals, but. Like the ratings in the cup finals, but I kind of skew. I want the lowest runs. I want to see NBC Sports like be very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, I think the West has already provided that pretty much.
NBC is like just St. Louis for the love of God. Come on. Yeah. Well, you know what? I almost think NBC might be okay if Edmonton made it because then they could finally market Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
And like say it ended up being Pittsburgh, Edmonton, and you have McDavid versus Crosby in the Cup Final. Come on,
that would be an easy sell.
You know, you got Crosby going to New York City. Come on.
Well, and not only that, but you've got the Oilers are going to be the underdog, so you've got the up and coming star player on the underdog team. Americans love that shit.
And despite you know Americans being dumb and maybe not being able to tell you where Edmonton is on the map. They probably know who the Oilers are because they know who Gretzky is.
If you know hockey even a little bit, you have to know who they are.
Yeah. If you say, the team Gretzky won all the cups with, you'd be like, yep, that's them.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, let's not forget the cup that they won without Gretzky, too.
Yeah. No, they didn't do anything without Gretzky. How dare you?
Yeah. Mark Messier got one of those cups, too, without Gretzky.
I know.
Got to give my boy Mess some love here, man. Come on.
All right, so Blues Predators.
I've got St. Louis.
Yeah, you know,
I picked St. Louis to beat Minnesota. They pleasantly surprised me. I don't know, man. I'm gonna go with the Blues.
Yeah, I think The Predators might be...
I don't know that Rene can keep up that save percentage, first off.
Rene's an issue, but P.K. Subban, Philip Forsberg, they have some talent. But I think overall, with St. Louis having been here before now, isn't that weird to say St. Louis has the playoff experience in a series? Jake Allen, I think, is just the better goalie right now, despite the amazing series Pekka had. And they still have, their top guys were held down in the last series. But Nashville isn't the same old Barry Trotz Nashville Predators where they just played the trap the entire game. They're a little bit more up and down. And if you want to play up and down and let Vladimir Tarasenko get some free space, go for it. Let Vladimir Tarasenko score like 5 goals on you in a series. See what happens. So I think I might go Blues too. And I'm trying not to make it a I don't want to play the Predators for the Ducks advance thing. But I think as I kind of work it through in my head, I like the Blues a little bit more than I did just kind of at a quick glance.
There's always a shot that Jake Allen drops down to Earth 2. But I think, honestly, given the seasons that both have had, Jake Allen – His amazing series was closer to his standard level than Rene's was, so...
That's what I was going to ask, which one is playing a little more out of their mind. Man, I hate to pick against my Blues, so I'm not gonna. I look at Nashville, and they're a legitimate number 8 seed that knocked off a number 1. I think that, and now granted, they had a very easy time of it, but there has to be some sort of a... I'm not a letdown, I guess, but a kind of
where everything kind of comes back to earth.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe the Predators are still going to be the sexy pick among the analysts and all that because they're the hot team and we love Subban.
Yeah, okay.
And Smashville and country music and hey, Carrie Underwood's there.
Yeah, I know, but well, now you can't go wrong with the biscuit.
After biscuit. Mm.
Yeah, biscuits and gravy. You know they make biscuits and gravy flavored freaking potato chips now?
Oh, yeah. They make...
Endorsed by Larry the Cable Guy. I thought, how perfect is this?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Blues. I got to stay with my Blues. I think the Blues won the series. I just don't know that Nashville... I mean, I don't know how much... But then again, they didn't really put out all that much to beat the Blackhawks. I mean, it was a 4-game sweep. It wasn't like they had to reach down and get everything they had just to do it, you know? They did it with relative ease. So I don't know. How good are they? I don't know. I'm going to go with the Blues. I'm with you guys. I got to ride my Blues until they, disappoint me again.
Well, from the Central Division to the Pacific Division, and I'll have you know the first team that advanced out of the first round was the mighty Anaheim Ducks.
That's not necessarily a good thing.
Work of the Calgary Flames.
No, not necessarily a good thing usually, but I think this is a good thing for the Ducks because it's given them time to kind of heal up. The defense was a little banged up. It sounds like Cam Fowler might be available for game one on Wednesday, which would be amazing. Sammy Vatanen needed some time off too. And I think I wouldn't, unlike the Predators, where I would say that the Predators were a hot team that just cut through the Blackhawks, like they came out of nowhere. The Ducks didn't necessarily play their best hockey over the 4 games with the Flames. They were, the Flames could have beaten the Ducks at any one of these occasions. The Ducks ended up winning the games, of course, but the Ducks were there to be had. They had some bad stretches in the second periods of both game 1 and 2. They let the Flames hang around. They won, but they let them hang around. And really the only thing of that screamed hot team or what an amazing feat it was game 3 up in Calgary where, before the series, I had said Ducks in 5, and with the way the Flames were playing for the first half of that game in game 3, I said, okay, this is the game the Flames are going to win. Ducks will win game 4, come back for 5, whatever. And then the Ducks came out of nowhere, tied the game down from 3 goals, and won it a minute and a half into the overtime.
One of my famous, I'm going to turn this off because there's no point in watching it games, by the way.
Was game yeah, three. Well, yeah. I wouldn't blame you. Because as I was watching it, I was like, God, this is terrible. All right. Well, it was kind of a weird thing. Like, my grandpa was recording it. I had to watch it again with him later. So I was like, all right, dinner's on now. I'm just going to turn this off, and I'll watch the rest of it later. And I kept getting the score updates on my phone. I'm like, you gotta be joking me. And so when it went to overtime, I put my phone on airplane mode and said, you know what? I don't want to be spoiled for the end of this thing because this is too great. I don't want to be either crushed or elated. And then they ended up winning. And then it was just a matter of the Ducks came out and blew the doors off to open up game two, and they played a solid game down the stretch. They didn't blow out the Flames on any of these occasions, but they haven't really blown anybody out all season. They just did what they had to do, and it was a good series, but I'll take the time off for this team. I think it could be a good thing for them, actually.
But what do we think about how Edmonton dispatched with the San Jose Sharks?
I like this Oilers bunch. I got to tell you, I do.
I like the Oilers. It was kind of weird, though. Like, game one, San Jose steals in overtime. Because Edmonton, their first game back in the playoffs in forever, and they went up early in the game. Then the Sharks just slowly but surely came back into it, tied it, and won an OT. And was like, okay, maybe the Oilers got a little ahead of themselves, and this could be a long series. Then Edmonton shut San Jose out the next two games. Cam Talbot looked pretty good. I was like, okay, all right, the Oilers are maybe coming together here. Maybe they did a good job there beating the Sharks. And then game four, the Sharks win 7-0.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, Jesus, what just happened? Where did the Oilers go?
And I really thought that game was kind of the, okay, you just turned into a pumpkin game for the Oilers, kind of. But nope.
No, but I think a 7-0 game is probably easier to get out of your head than, you know, a 4-3 game that you lose with 5 seconds left.
Yeah, right? you can tell yourself that was a fluke. Let's just move on.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, plus you know early on that you're going to lose. It's not one of those, like Zach said, you're not going to get your heart ripped out with, you know, 3 seconds to go or an OT or whatever. You know you're done pretty early in that one. Because what were they up when I tuned in the first time?
They were up like 3 or 4-0 after the first period. And
yeah,
then
I mean,
just,
it was way out
they
of
were
hand.
6-0 halfway through. Yeah, it was
way out of
that's
hand.
That's a game that you could have turned it off, and like, yeah, there was no way. Because not only was San Jose scoring, Edmonton just looked god awful. Because the Oilers had shut them out the previous two games, and it's like the talk going into the game was, well, when will the Sharks score again? Are they going to get it out of their heads that, you know, Cam Talbot's really good? They scored 15 seconds into the game. It was like, all right, well, that's done. And then Edmonton won an overtime game at home and looked pretty good beating San Jose on the road. I think the Oilers still have flaws, though, that are exploitable.
Well, they're a young team. They're kind of playing – I don't want to say they're playing above their head because that would sort of imply that they're not good, and I think they are good. But they're a young team that I think is very much – you know, they haven't been here before. They just want to see how far they can push it.
I like the, I think we refer to it as like fast break style they play, where they don't, you know, we said that they weren't good at like playing, you know, setting up in the zone. And I don't know. I like them. I don't know. Would I pick them to beat the Ducks? I don't know that I'd go that far, but I don't know.
Yeah. The thing to look at the other side, of course, is who they were playing. Mm-hmm. And I think it seemed like, at least the way things finally played out, that last season when the Sharks made the Cup final, it was like, oh, we finally did it. This is our last hurrah. We're going to get it this time. And they didn't win. And they come back this season, and they had a bad stretch towards the end where they were on top of the division. And I told you guys, I'd given it up a long time ago.
Yeah.
They fell down. They had to play the Oilers, and they had that 7-0 game, and it was like maybe they recaptured it for a second, but it wasn't there. That wasn't there in either of the next two games.
Well, it came out today that Thornton was playing with
a torn ACL.
Yeah.
Like, first off, I get it. Hockey players are tough sons of bitches.
Mm-hmm.
But come on, Joe Thornton. That's like, I don't understand how you even do that.
That's dangerous. That's dangerous.
You lose a leg.
Yeah.
In other sports.
And also, you know,
dude, he's got to play play to a point to get that crying meme out of everybody's minds as the image of him, you know? So I'm going to play that. I cut my fucking leg off. They won't be talking about that meme anymore. I don't know, man.
It's just so weird because, okay, this Sharks team was already older and slower than the Oilers, and Joe Thornton's getting to the age where even at 100%, he's still kind of a lug on the ice. So maybe him playing didn't just endanger himself. It probably hampered the team's chances because, well, I don't know. What was he going to do? He's now just, you know, a hobbled old hockey player that the team has to, you know, figuratively carry.
Yeah.
Against a team that's skating circles around them.
He absolutely looks the part too with that beard. No?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying.
And but... as I'm thinking through a lot of the goals, and like I told you guys going into the series, Edmonton still relies too much to me on scoring in transition, scoring on the fast break, if you will.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the Sharks were going to slow things down a little bit. And that's kind of how it played out too. Edmonton got a lot of breakaway goals in the series because the Sharks were either too slow or made a mistake. Even in game three, where Edmonton won 1-0, they got that goal about midway through the third period on a bad clear that just popped into the middle of the slot, and somebody, one of the Oilers, jumped on it and threw it a backhand straight through the five hole of Martin Jones. So I don't know. I think Edmonton is better than I gave them credit for. And they could give the Ducks a scare, but I think the Ducks are just a better defensive team. I think they're, you know, John Gibson has shown that he can have some real bouts of greatness sometimes. And in the Connor McDavid era, Connor McDavid hasn't done all that well against the Ducks. Now, the Oilers did win the season series with the Ducks this year. But Connor McDavid didn't score in 2 years in the league. It took Connor McDavid until his final game against the Ducks this season to score his first goal against the Ducks in, I think it was 8 games total, maybe. And he's going to see Ryan Kessler every single time he's out on the ice. Plenty of people can attest that Ryan Kessler is kind of an asshole. So I like the Ducks' chances in the series. It'll be definitely tougher than the first round. Like this is going to be at least a 6-game series, I think. I still feel confident in the Ducks' abilities to play Edmonton even or better for the most of it.
I look at the West right now, and I think that part of me says Anaheim is clearly the best team of the four, without much question. I don't know that the other three are even close. But then this Edmonton group, they're plucky. They've got, what'd you call it, the rating last week? I can't remember. They've got competitive.
Oh, compete level?
They've got a compete level that I like. I don't know. I got to go with the Ducks, I think. I think I'm with you, Zach. I think the Ducks take it in 6. But I think we could see some very exciting hockey out of this series. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. I think of the second round series, this is, you know, the top one to watch is Pittsburgh-Washington. Like, that's just,
yeah,
there's nowhere. That's going to be the
best. I think a lot of people are going to be watching that just out of curiosity because I'll say more when we get to that, but this has got to be the year that Washington does something or else. Eesh.
Yeah.
I have some theories on that too when we get to the East here. Yeah, because that's very interesting stuff that's going on out of that series. Out of the
Toronto series. The other series to watch is this Ducks Oilers series. I think this is going to be very entertaining.
Yeah, I do too.
And you're going to. The other thing that's nice about the Oilers at least getting to the second round, more American viewers will get to see more of Connor McDavid than they did all season long. So that's good. Yeah. I hope that he doesn't do anything spectacular. I actually hope that people are disappointed by what they see in Connor McDavid because that means that the Ducks did a very good job in shutting him down.
What do you think, Mike?
Still get more chances to see him, so that's nice.
When you say, Zach, that they rely too much on the break, and basically scoring on transition. Another way to read that, though, is that they do a very good job on capitalizing on their chances. I don't know. This is a tough one. I am just going to say Edmonton, just because this whole thing has been changed.
Because you like to hurt me, Mike.
It's been a changing of the guard kind of deal. I don't know.
Because he likes it, the what?
He likes to hurt me.
Oh, he likes to hurt you.
Yes.
I don't know. The Edmonton.
No, it's because they're Canadian. And, you know, Canada, every Canadian wants, it's a national thing for them. I forget what the bullshit reasoning is. It's something remarkably stupid, but.
I don't know. This has. Like, you talk about Ryan Kessler, and I think that's definitely going to be the game plan for the Ducks is, you know, get Ryan.
Connor McDavid, yes.
Exactly, yeah. But I.
Check him in the throat.
But. And I realize that Kessler's not exactly father time here, but he's closer to the end of his career than he is to the beginning of it.
You guys want to borrow Brandon Dubinsky to beat up on him for a while?
So
that's okay.
I'm not entirely sure, to be perfectly honest. I'm just picking youth. I'm just going. This is. I'm just going to say we're seeing a big changing of the guard. Anaheim has kind of been a stalwart of the West, and probably would have won at least one cup by now if it weren't for Bruce Boudreau. I see this as sort of a complete shakeup. We already got that, I think, in the other Western series, but I think here, like, this is going to be a series where it's like, wow, you know. The Western Conference is different, so whatever.
Shall we talk a little Eastern Conference Stanley Cup playoffs?
Woo!
Let's.
Shall we go right to the heartbreaker right. For Mike and get that one done?
Sure. You know,
or not. We can wait for it.
It's the number one seed. We can start there.
No, let's wait. Let's hold off to that one on the end, because I think there's some good stuff we can talk about with that one.
All right. Well, do we want to start with your heartbreak then? Because the Blue Jackets were the first team eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoff.
Yeah, it wasn't heartbreak so much.
From the Eastern Conference, I should say.
Quiet resignation is more, I think, a better description of what it was.
Yeah, we talked a lot about it last week when they were already down at the time, what, 3-0?
3-0, yeah.
Columbus hadn't won their series or their game yet. Yeah, they won game four, so that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about
The problem was, the problem for the Blue Jackets was, we talked about the high save percentage numbers for, you know, Jake Allen and Pekka Rinne.
Right.
Sergei Bobrovsky, potential Vezina winner, probable Vezina winner this season, in a first-round playoff series, had an 8.82 save percentage.
I was going to say 874, but okay, that's a little bit better. Yeah, he picked a really bad time to not play very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. You cannot afford to do that when you're playing the goddamn Pittsburgh Penguins.
Right. You can't do that really against any team in the playoffs, but if you're going to play that poorly, the Penguins, probably not the team you want to do it against. Yeah, that was a big part of it. I don't even know where to start.
Fleury played well for the Penguins.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't collapse. But the other thing to kind of take note of this is the leading goal scorer for the Penguins in this series, Jake Guentzel.
Not a real name.
He had a hat trick in one of the games, but, you know, so two goals in the rest of the series. But Sidney Crosby wasn't amazing, but in those first three games, as we talked about before, the Penguins were just better. The Penguins were just flat out dominantly better.
I think too that with the Blue Jackets, okay, let's say that for a second that they effectively shut down Crosby, okay? Mm-hmm. They don't have enough to make that the offset isn't enough to make them win the series. Like, they can shut him down, but they've got to do more than just that to win, and they weren't able to, if that makes any sense. Like, okay, you shut down Crosby effectively, but you don't have enough firepower coming the other way to offset that and make it work to your advantage, because then it was just,
It's
and beyond that, Evgeny Malkin had 11 points. So it's not like, sure, you shut down Crosby, but Malkin still, at this point, is the playoff leader. So, yeah, good luck with that.
And I think that, like I've said all along, I think Columbus is very similar to Minnesota. I think they had a good regular season. I think they, but if...
either of them, I'd say the Jackets maybe aren't quite at their ceiling, but they're pretty close. I don't know. I mean, what do they do to get? I mean, you know, who's going to be the guy that steps up? Saad, maybe? I don't know. I'm just saying. Well, I look at him and I go, what, you know, what are they going to do to get good enough to beat a Pittsburgh or a Washington or a New York? I don't see it.
Well, one, what they need is what we talked about. Bobrovsky can't play that terribly in the playoffs. Like, you just can't.
No.
You don't need a goalie to steal a series to win, but you need a goalie to play at a playoff caliber to win a playoff series, obviously. And I don't think I'm being too harsh to say that the Blue Jackets players, management, and fans expected more out of him. He let a lot of people down. You can't play that way in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Well, here's a question I have with regard to that. How much was the lack of, well, I would say, like, top-tier defensemen have to do with that, too? I mean, is it all his fault? Or
as a goalie, I'm always going to defer to the side of saying that he was let down by inferior defensemen because, you know, that's what they do. They just make everything harder than it needs to be.
It
didn't help.
Bobrovsky wasn't good. Bobrovsky wasn't good, but the defenseman could have been a little bit better for sure. But what do the Blue Jackets need to do to get better? Honestly, just wait.
Yeah.
Like, Seth Jones is still in his – this was just his, what, third year in the league?
I think so, yeah.
Zach Werenski is a rookie up for the Calder Trophy. He's not going to win it. You know, congratulations on being nominated, but it's either Auston Matthews or Patrick Laine. Boone Jenner is still a young kid.
Yeah.
This is a team that has a lot of promise in it. And really, if Bobrovsky is just even slightly better, this is a six-game series, and maybe you feel a little bit better about it. If he's equal to even what Marc-Andre Fleury did, maybe it goes seven, and you could say, hey, we lost the coin flip, and we played pretty good, and let's take that into next year.
First off, I just want to stop right there and say that before the playoffs started, did any of us think the sentence, if he could have played as well as Marc-Andre Fleury, would have been uttered throughout this entire podcast?
Right. Well, here's the thing, too, if you're the Blue Jackets. You see this series, and you understand the predicament you're in. You have to get better, because as the playoff format is set up, you're going to go against the Capitals or the Penguins or the Rangers pretty much every year.
Yep.
So you have to get as good or better than the best to end up winning a playoff series. And is that fair to them? Probably not. But that's just the reality of it, is that you have to be as good or better than the best to survive in the playoffs as they're set up. And the fact that they got to where they were in the regular season and how they performed against those teams during the regular season tells me they can get there. You've got some guys that you need to cut off. Like Jack Johnson, God bless you. You've been there for rejuvenation, but you're not effective anymore as a defenseman in this league. Brandon Dubinsky is a good shutdown guy, but he's not a top line center. They could use a little bit, like maybe one more scorer. They could use a veteran defenseman to replace Jack Johnson, a more effective veteran defenseman to kind of lead that young group, like Adam Foote did for them back in the day. Mm-hmm. And if Sergei Bobrovsky was competent in the series, you'd feel better about this, I think.
Yeah.
But the fact that he was so bad and that they got dump trucked through the first two games, it makes you feel a whole lot worse about the team. But I think the Blue Jackets are still in a fine place. But like I said last week, I think I said this too, they cannot be the Dallas Stars or the Colorado Avalanche.
Or the Columbus Blue Jackets of a few years ago.
Right. You cannot let this be a flash in the pan. And I think those first Blue Jackets were more hampered by injuries than anything else. But you can't just have this amazing season and do all this goodwill for yourself and for your community as a hockey team, and then
and turn
get
around
rid of it all
Yeah, and be terrible again next year? No. This is a huge step in the right direction for them, not only from a teaching championship standpoint, but overall hockey in the market, the whole thing. And you're right. They've got to build on this. It can't just be, we had 103 points, and that was great. Wasn't that great last year? And back to, you know, whatever, 75 points next season. Can't happen. Simply cannot happen. Got to keep moving forward.
It's going to be interesting to see how that goes down, because I've crapped a lot on John Tortorella before, but I do think he's got what it takes to keep this team focused. But the thing of John Tortorella is that you're really not sure what you're going to get. You're going to get the John Tortorella who – you could get the John Tortorella who led the Lightning to a decent playoff run, and then the next year went further and won the Cup. Or you get the John Tortorella who, with that same Lightning team, the next couple of years, always flamed out in the playoffs before the whole thing kind of just fell apart. So it's kind of a crapshoot. He's a very emotional coach who taps into the emotions of his players, and sometimes if those run ragged, things fall apart rather quickly. So,
I don't know. We talked about that last week, too, with a young team that works for a while, but as they get older, how much longer is that stuff going to hold up where it just becomes just noise in the background? And you know what I mean? It's a fine line. But, yeah, I think you're right, Zach. Had Bobrovsky played better and they'd been a little more competitive, it wouldn't seem quite like the ass-beating that it was. But, you can't complain too much. I mean, a 16-game winning streak, 103 points in the regular season, that were things that no one even thought for a million years would happen before the season started. So all in all, it's definitely a great step in the right direction. They've got a good young team, and now, like you said, they've got to build on it and go from there.
Yep. Yeah, they've got plenty of things to look up towards. The Penguins, on the other side of it, look, I mean, they're just as good as they were a year ago. It's of the teams in the playoffs right now, they have to be the Cup favorites, right?
I would say so, yeah.
I mean, they're going to be, despite them being the lower-seeded team and Washington being the top-seeded team, based on previous history and based on what we saw in the first rounds even, Pittsburgh is going to be the favorite going into this Washington series, and why shouldn't they be?
Well, I mean, Pittsburgh has got that thing like Chicago had in their Cup runs where it just seems like they just – if something needs to be done, they do it. You know, we're down two, we'll go out and get two, no problem. And they make it look – they just make it look easy. I mean, it's not easy, but they make it look like they can do what they need to do whenever they need to do it. And that's just – I like them a lot at this point as a favorite. But –
Especially due to the fact that they did this without Matt Murray. Like, we thought that Marc-Andre Fleury being in net would be the thing to undo them, but he looks like competent Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah.
And there's no talk about, you know, if or when Matt Murray would have to come back. They've never even told us what it was other than the obscure lower body injury. But if he can play like he did in this series, and then that won't be a problem. It'll be up to the rest of the team, and they've shown over past performances that they can be better than the Capitals. Really, this series isn't about what the Penguins can do, because we know what they can do. It'll be what the Capitals can, if the Capitals can finally do something to the Penguins.
I'm going to say,
I think the Penguins are going to be okay.
This is going to be a case. This is one of those series where if the Capitals do not win it, you need to seriously talk about blowing the team up.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah, well, because to get to that point too, let's talk about Capitals Leafs. Congrats to the Capitals. They move on, but the fact that it was so hard puts a great credit to the Maple Leafs. Great season, but the fact that this series had to be as hard as it was has to scare you if you're a Capitals fan. Maybe you say, oh well, now we're, you know, we got that out of the way, and now we'll be able to kind of get things going. We figured ourselves out or something. I wouldn't think that. I think the Capitals are in a tough spot again.
It was
the Leafs made them play for it.
Oh, this, did they ever?
As a Leafs fan, I was very proud to see that every game was within a goal, even the games they lost. The Leafs were never blown out. Even the one game where the Leafs gave up five goals, like they were down like 5-2 at one point, and they clawed back to 5-4. And you know, as a Leafs fan, I can say, well, if your sons of bitches didn't, you know, slack off the first period, maybe they wouldn't have gotten four goals in the first period, and you could have won that game. Yeah. But at the same time, the fact that they kept fighting is encouraging. As a Leafs fan, I couldn't be happier, and it made me very happy to see the crowd in Toronto when that game was over in overtime. You know, the fans gave that team a standing ovation, chanting "Go Leafs, go!" It made me a proud Southern Ontarian, a proud pseudo Torontonian. So, I'm happy. I can't say I was disappointed. They made the Capitals play for it, but I have to say, yeah, going in, I kind of thought this would be a series where we kind of got it handed to us, and it wasn't.
Hey, you know what else too? I'm going to go out on a limb here. That Matthews kid, I think he's going to be pretty good.
Oh, God. The thing that I...
Hot take by Greg, Austin Matthews is a good hockey player.
Like, I got to see him a little bit during the year.
It's a stretch, I know.
It wasn't necessarily the goals or the assists he had. It was just some of the little plays he did where it's like...
Oh, he's a joy to watch.
Oh, my God, that's so smart.
Yeah.
Oh, he made the right play there. Like, any other rookie would be like, oh, my God, here's the puck. But he's just like, no, here's the move. Oh, I'm not going to turn into the traffic and throw this up the boards. I want to hold on to this for a second. I'm going to turn, shield my body. Look, oh, there's the outlet pass. And it's like, I saw that. I'm like, that kid's 19.
That is exactly what I was talking about when watching him. He just did things, and you went, this kid, he's got command of this game already. He knows what he's doing already, right out of the gate. I mean,
that's the most impressive thing. Anybody can come in and be like a flare of talent or whatever.
Yeah, but he has a presence has well beyond talent. His years. Yeah,
yeah, presence and the hockey IQ thing. That
go charts. You know what? I look forward to many seasons of Austin 316.
the kid can play. I mean, the goal he scored, was it last night?
Yeah.
Just nice. I mean, it was just one of those things where you go, that's a 19-year-old kid, and it's hard to believe because he just looked like a seasoned veteran in the way he's really got it. And I think you guys have got, you know, you want to talk about a bright future. I think Toronto's got a very bright one here right now.
I told Zach during the break that I felt like, this series almost gave me an ulcer just because every single game was either overtime or one goal. And that one game where that was 5-4 Capitals, I was ready to walk away. I was ready to turn the game off. And then the Leafs crawled back just as I was like contemplating turning it off. And then I was like, God damn it. I'm going to stick with it. And then they almost killed me, but it was...
That's what I said last week, man. The playoffs are great as long as your team's not involved.
Mm-hmm.
It's abject fucking misery if they are. I don't care what anybody says, unless you're like Zach or you're just, you know, plowing through a sweep. But these tight games, that's not fun. That's misery, man. I'm sorry. Overtime, all that stuff, forget it. No thanks.
But I will say, you know, hot take for Mike, Brandon Holtby is a good goalie.
Yeah, he's not bad.
Yeah. I will take that. I accept that.
And Freddie Anderson he had that one 5-goal game, but
I thought he played pretty good.
He kept himself level headed. I don't know if that's good.
That's his deal. Yeah, he's super level headed. He's calm as a cucumber. You can't tell what the hell's going on in that guy's head.
We've got to throw Willie Nylander in there too, just because his name's Willie Nylander.
Oh, yeah. I was happy. I can't say much more other than I'm proud of this team, and I was proud of my hometown just kind of acting like the knowledgeable, classy hockey fans I know they can be, and I look forward to next year.
The Leafs played them. I mean, just as tough as you can play a team and losing six games, I thought. Just as tough as you can play anybody. It was really impressive to watch, and you guys are headed in the right direction for sure.
I
great series, very exciting. I thought
It was very exciting. The Capitals, I can say this, obviously over the course of that series, I learned to never trust a lead against them. But, yeah, I honestly can't give an honest evaluation because I was just so happy that the Leafs are hanging with them that can't really tell you if that was, you know, the Leafs just being better than expected or if that is a case of Washington just not being very good.
I think Washington's good. I think the Leafs just played them very well. And Zach, do you think that this makes the Washington Capitals and their fans nervous? I think that this series is exactly what they needed to get started. They had to have this happen, and they had to come through and do it. And I think believe me, over the years we've seen with the Caps, they could easily have thrown that series away because of what gets in their heads. And this time they didn't do that. I mean, especially last night when Toronto scored, when Matthews scored, what, about 7 minutes left? I don't even remember.
Yeah.
And Toronto's got the lead, and you're looking at Game 7 all of a sudden, and the Caps came back, tied it up, and won it in overtime. And I thought that's going to be the difference. That's the switch that they needed to hit. And they're going to be okay now. It's not in their heads now. They're confident. I think it could have gone really horribly for them, but I think this series is what they needed, and it's going to really play out for them. And I like them the rest of the way through this thing. Believe it or not.
Yeah. Man. It's such a hard thing to say. You know, I think
Pittsburgh-Washington is going to be a hell of a series.
Yeah. It's because it's really kind of life or death for the Capitals. I don't know if it's life or death necessarily for the Penguins. I think that they're just going to be good and they want to win the series, of course. But if the Capitals really want to get through this, they're going to have to treat it like this is our cup final.
Yeah.
We have to win this.
Yeah.
If, you know, not only obviously if they lose it, they're out. But if they don't win this series, they'll never win anything.
No.
Ever. And you can say, oh, well, if we lose, we can try it again later. No. If they don't win this series, it's done. Like, not only will they have to blow it up, it's just they will never beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. Because this isn't even a thing necessarily for this group. But in their franchise histories, the Penguins have beaten the Capitals 8 out of 9 times in the playoffs. In playoff series.
Yeah, that goes beyond just Crosby, Ovechkin.
Right. And, you know, that's to say, obviously, when earlier years, the Capitals weren't near this good, and of course, you're not going to beat Mario Lemieux and the like, but they have to do this. Because if they do, I think that they can get all the way through. Whoever yep. wins this series goes on to the cup final and has a pretty damn good chance at winning the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Capitals are really just going to have to treat this like it's life or death. Fight for everything. Do everything in your power to beat this. And if they don't, they're not going to beat the Penguins. I think that's part of it. If they don't play to their ultimate level, they're not going to do it.
Zach says they've got to give everything. They've got to do everything they can to win. Caps and four. I mean, no, Pens and four.
I don't know. I think it's going to be a really good series. I think that Washington really showed me something with the way that they held off a Toronto team that was relentless. And Washington made, you know, they stood up to it. And I think that was important for them. I don't know that I believe they would have done that last year. I just, the confidence thing, especially when the Leafs got the split in D.C. to start the series, and you're like, oh, here we go again. But the Caps, I don't know. They reached down and they found something that I don't think they'd had before in this series. And I'm looking forward to this. I think it's going to be really good.
So I take it you're picking Washington?
Uncomfortably, but yes, I'm going to go with the Caps.
I'm going to say Washington, but with the caveat of if you don't get it, Washington, then you've got to tear it all down. Like, because all season I have been kind of riding you. Like, okay, you've had a great season, Washington, but all season on this show, whenever we talk about you, I'd go, yeah, but they're the Capitals. They're not going to impress. Well, we've got to the point now where, you know, you have the chance to do that. And if it doesn't happen, it's over. Like this team has to be blown up. This team will never accomplish anything.
Well, that's like Zach said with the Blue Jackets too. It's never going to get easy for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got the same problems that Columbus has. So you've got to do it now.
If you don't do it now, I mean, you're going to be playing the Penguins forever.
Yeah.
So,
and the NHL engineered everything, you know, specifically
you can't,
for that.
You can't look at it as like, okay, we'll get them again next year, or maybe next year we won't play these guys. No, this is the battle you've got to fight, so you might as well go ahead and win it now. But I don't know. So you like the Caps too, I guess? I mean, I didn't mean to sidetrack us like that.
I like the Caps, but yeah, with the caveat of, you know, this is the best everyone has been saying all season. Yeah, but this year it's different. Yeah, but this year is the year they finally put it all together. And okay, I'll buy that, but now's the time where it's all got to come together. So,
yep.
I'm picking the Caps, but it's very touchy.
Like reluctantly, like I am.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm going to give the Capitals. Marc-Andre Fleury was fine in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Can you trust him to continue to be fine?
That's a good question. Like,
we don't know how long Murray's out. No idea.
No. No, it just looked like a weird, like, he took warm-ups in that first game, and, you know, he looked like he tweaked something, could be a groin.
Boy.
But they're not saying, I don't even know if he's been the backup in these games or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he has been. So hard to say, and you know, it's not like the Penguins needed to ever address it because he was playing so well in the first round that oh, it's fine. Oh man,
he's not lining up against the Columbus Blue Jackets in this series, though.
You know? Right. I want to think that the Capitals learned something in the first round. I want to think that because I would like to see them at least. Because here's the thing with the Capitals. Not only have they never beaten the Penguins or haven't won the Stanley Cup, none of that, they've never even been in the conference final.
Really?
With the Ovechkin group. Yeah.
Oh, with this group.
Ovechkin has never been to the conference final.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You see, now I could see them getting past Pittsburgh and choking it away in the conference final.
Yeah.
I can see that happening easily.
That would still be a disappointment, but it would still be farther than they've gotten at all.
Yeah.
Since Ovechkin got there in, 2005?
Have they been to the conference finals ever?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, okay. The Capitals went to the final against the Red Wings with Joey Juno and Peter Bondra.
Yeah. Bondra and Juno. I remember those guys.
Only the goalie.
The slate blue jerseys with the flying eagle.
That's right.
And then they got swept by the Red Wings.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
That is a good point on Fleury. I think Holtby, he's solid.
He played them last year, Holtby wasn't the reason they lost the Penguins last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because everything else was the problem, but it wasn't Holtby's fault.
So Holtby will be fine, but yeah, Andre Fleury.
Well, you know, you talked about Anderson being level headed. I think Holtby is very similar because I mean, I was watching those two last night. And there would be like a flurry of activity in front of the net, and they were just, it was like, I'd be flipping out. Like, oh my God, I wouldn't know which way to turn. They were very cool and collected, both of them, at all times. It really impressed me. Anyway. Yeah.
Anyway, my head says Penguins, my heart says Capitals. I think I picked the Penguins in the bracket thing I did. But what the hell? I'm going to give you my last shot, Capitals. You do it now or you don't do it.
I guess we're all at.
We're all on Washington with the caveat that it's do or die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that we've all picked Washington, well, sorry about that, Caps fans.
they've done it to themselves over the years.
I don't know. I think something clicked in the Toronto series, and that might be the difference. We'll see.
Maybe. And, you know, people always say that the Cup winner usually has at least one tough series to get out of. And maybe Washington got out of the first round. Usually those tough series come later, though.
but here's the
effective eight seed, you know?
But here's the thing about that. One, yeah, they usually don't come to the eight seed. And two, even if they beat Pittsburgh, I don't see it being easy. So this could be a two tough series run here. Yeah. You know, even if they beat Pittsburgh, it's not going to be they're not going to run away with it.
Right. Well, and usually a cup winning team usually has one, maybe two easy series, mm-hmm. unless you're the fucking 2014 Kings. I still hate that team so much.
And you just game seven your way to the Stanley Cup.
That's stupid. Such a dumb team. I don't. Maybe it would come in the conference final. They could get rid of the Rangers or the Sens pretty easy. Maybe it comes in the Cup final against whoever the West turns out.
Washington Ottawa would be pretty neat just from a capital city.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
Like Tank's Barstool Sports tweet today where he put the all caps about the Caps winning. Get it?
He was like, he typed in all caps, the Maple Leafs have fallen in fall.
Yeah.
And then he said, and then I guess because we, just in case we didn't get the joke, he actually wrote, note, I'm writing in all caps.
Yeah, like, because just in case we weren't as sharp as he is, you know?
That's well, sharp.
You know, but that's always weird because the Capitals logo is spelled with all lowercase letters. Yeah.
I pointed that out to a friend who I was watching a game with. Like, have you noticed the Capitals logo is all lowercase letters? I'm like, you know what? You're right.
I think that the thing that's interesting to me, too, at least from you know, our perspective as people of the CCSLC, what's that? Look it up. In almost, you know, in almost every capacity on their social media stuff, the NHL's social media, I should say, not necessarily the Capitals itself, but the NHL, whenever they've done like promotional stuff, they keep using the W Eagle logo for the Cap rather than the Wordmark logo, which is the official logo.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, teams are there are going to be a couple teams getting full redesigns next year with the Adidas thing. So
yeah,
that is interesting.
I want to know why Capitals is spelled with an A.
Because
Capitol with the O is the building, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Capitol building, building is an O, but the capital city is an A. So.
Gotcha, okay.
Which is why when the Caps had those alternate jerseys with the Capitol building on them.
That said Capitol's underneath it.
It was technically wrong.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
Yeah. Technically speaking.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Columbus is not the Capitol of Ohio. It's the Capitol of Ohio. Gotcha. All right.
Right.
Hey, you learn something every day. How about that?
Okay. The Capitol building is in the Capitol of Ohio.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. All right.
Right. But from one nation's capital to the other, as Mike alluded to, the Ottawa Senators, a team that we all admittedly said we knew nothing about. You know,
I knew they liked the trap.
Yeah.
And I knew that they had a top three seed, even though they weren't scoring any goals, and that confused me.
Yeah, I know this. They beat Boston in the playoffs. That's what I know about them.
Right. As I watched these games, something jumped out at me. Like in game five, they went into overtime, and they went into double overtime in that game. And I'm sitting there in like the middle of the first overtime, and they're going back and forth. And I just say out loud to myself, alone in the room, God, these teams suck. I'm just watching. It's game five of a playoff series. They're going into double overtime, and it's just, God, these are bad teams. Ottawa has a lot of talent. That Erik Karlsson looked amazing in this series. Bobby Ryan came alive. Craig Anderson looked great in goal.
Bobby Ryan, isn't he the guy who Brian Burks refused to pick for Team USA and then badmouthed him to the media?
Yeah, despite him being with the Ducks when they picked Bobby Ryan number two overall behind Sidney Crosby.
Didn't he say something like he said something like, I regret drafting him? Like, he was really, he really savaged the guy.
Yeah, very, very undeserved. Bobby Ryan had a couple hard seasons in Ottawa, but especially this year, but he looked great. He scored four goals for the Sens.
And who are we to question Brian Burke? I mean, I'm sure the American team he put together did.
Yeah.
Well, for themselves.
It was funny because as I pull up the NHL's page here and I'm looking at all the statistical breakdown from the regular series season between these two, the Bruins were 13th in goals for, the Senators were 22nd. The Bruins were 9th in goals against. The Sens were 10th in goals against. Bruins were 7th on the power play. The Sens were 23rd on the power play. The Bruins were 1st on the penalty kill. The Sens were 22nd on the penalty kill. Bruins were 3rd in faceoffs. Senators were 10th. And then who was the better team at the end of the day according to the standings? Well, the Senators. And who was the better team after 6 games winning them 4-2? That was the Senators. The Senators, as the series went along, it was clear that Boston just wasn't good enough. They got a lot of injuries and they just couldn't really keep up through a longer series like it ended up being. Ottawa was fine. They beat the Bruins and that's good for them. I don't think that they're going to beat the Rangers because I think they're just not. Like I said, I don't think either of these teams are really all that good. So
I will say that I patted Toronto on the back for how they responded to seeing their team eliminated at home. Boston can go fuck themselves because the Bruins threw trash on the ice. The Bruins fans threw trash on the ice after the Senators scored in overtime to eliminate them.
Really?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Forgot to mention, too, that when the Oilers beat the Sharks in the Shark Tank, some Sharks fans threw a full bucket of popcorn right over the glass and onto the Edmonton Oilers bench.
Oh,
so that was,
for peace sake.
Yeah, you know.
So, but you know, we should congratulate the Boston Bruins fan base because they handled a playoff defeat without using any racial slurs, and that's a big step for them.
Progress.
Well, I'm sure somebody called Erik Karlsson a meatball at some point. you know, Swedish meatball, or you know, go to IKEA. Go and show me a picture of how to build a chair. but yeah, I mean, typical Boston, right? Yeah. Did you expect anything less, really?
Actually, I expect worse. So yeah. I think it was a step in the right direction for him.
Beyond what we've said, I don't know how much else there is to talk about that series, to be perfectly honest.
I would like Boston. To see the Rangers win.
Yeah.
I when think it comes to the better team.
Yeah, well, with that series, with how the Rangers got to where they are, beating the Montreal Canadiens.
It was exactly like Mike said.
Well, you know, the biggest thing really to pull out of this series is, hey, Montreal, the Preds won the trade. PK Subban's in the second round. Where's Shea Weber?
Well, this is true.
Going home.
I think what Mike said, like when we did the preview, was basically that, like, if Carey Price wasn't enough, they were beatable, and I think that Lundqvist outplayed him, and that was pretty much the difference.
Price didn't have a bad series per se, but
Lundqvist was better. Yeah,
he wasn't stellar, and the thing that concerned me about Montreal came to pass was that, like, when push came to shove, they really didn't have anyone they could rely on to step up and play. They didn't have. To compare them to another Canadian team that went out in the first round, they did not have an Austin Matthews who you could just pin your hopes on.
Or like, a Rick Nash, who actually showed up for a little bit in this
show. Rick Nash in the playoffs. Look at that.
Yeah, how about that?
And one of those storylines going in, too, was Henrik Lundqvist has been terrible in his career in Montreal. He won two of the three games they played there in this series, including a shutout in game one.
And then, you know, you got a little 5'1" Matt Zuccarello yesterday dropping a couple goals in, which was fun.
Matt Zuccarello trying to check everything he can, the little guy.
They said he's 5'8". It's like, if that dude's 5'8", come on, no way.
No, there's no way.
Maybe with the skates on.
He's 5'4", 5'5", at best. little Norwegian kid.
I'm with you guys. I mean, I'm glad the Rangers. I'm kind of not glad they beat Montreal because I had the Montreal to win the East. But as far as the series goes, I hope the Rangers win. But I don't see it as being a very exciting series.
No, I think
the Rangers will win it handedly. Five games.
Yeah, I was the Rangers did impress me a lot in this series. I thought Montreal would be a much tougher out. I mean, 6 games is nothing to shake your head at, but it just seemed like Montreal's offense really dried up. Some of their top guys weren't like Alexander Radulov, as he did all season, was kind of their offensive engine, but Patrick Reddy disappeared. Shea Weber was okay, not great. It just kind of went away. And like you said, it came down to a goaltending really too.
Yeah.
And interesting note, that game four, when the Rangers won, it broke like a 7-game home playoff losing streak for the Rangers.
Really?
Which, yeah, they hadn't won like 7 in a row at MSG in the playoffs, which sounded weird, but
yeah, it is weird.
Was what it was. So the Rangers looked overly solid. And of course it came out to their benefit actually of being the fourth best team in the Metropolitan, because this was their tough series. Now they get Ottawa, which I agree with Boldia should be a handy series. If it goes longer than five, I will be surprised. I think if it does go any longer, it's because Craig Anderson's having an incredible series. But other than that, I don't see many areas in which the Senators are better than the Rangers. The only place I'll give them is maybe defensemen, and that's just because of Erik Karlsson, who's playing with two micro hairline fractures in his left heel.
Oh, big deal. Come on.
He's not playing with a torn ACL or a punctured lung or
His eyes swollen shut with his face broken. Yeah.
Right. Can't even see that. What a pansy Swede.
No kidding, man. I think the Rangers
Don
win, but I'm
not impressed.
Put a pin in Don Cherry, because we have to talk about that before we're done.
God,
what did he kill a European player with an axe before he showed up to do the game?
Yeah, I saw somebody put a picture of that out, and then the caption on the tweet was, "Try making the Red Wings now, you Swedish fuck."
The look that Ron McLean is giving him too is perfect in that picture.
For those that somehow didn't see the Hockey Night in Canada coverage, or at least a snippet or a picture of it, Don Cherry in like a pure white suit that looked like somebody sprayed red paint. Like,
no, it looked like he had hacked somebody up with an axe.
It looked like Christian Bale in American Psycho.
Right. It's like a scene out of Dexter or something. I don't know, man. Maybe not. I've never seen Dexter. Maybe they don't do scenes like that.
And wearing a Montreal Canadiens tie to top it off.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Check it out. I know Don is known for his sartorial choices, you know. But this one, I'm like, okay. I got like the ones that look like Christmas wrapping paper. Right. And, you know, the purple, wild, this and that. But this one was just like, dude, really?
Well, like, and usually it looks like it's just the fabric is made to look like that. This literally looked like someone put paint all over it.
Or through blood. Yeah, it was just, it looked like a Jackson, like a Jackson Pollock design jacket is what it looked like.
Right. That's how it looked like it was actually made. Like someone said, you want to make an axe murderer suit? Yeah, how do we do that? Well, get some red paint and just, you know, put a blender, fill it with paint.
Find Don Cherry, get a parking lot, give him an axe, and find a Swedish hockey player and make him wear a white suit.
It's just insane. And then to add like the flourish of the rose, like tucked in to the lapel too, it just makes it look like he came back from a mob hit. Like, it's like I was out at a fancy dinner and then we had to get some business done in the alleyway. And this is what happened.
Oh, I so love Don Cherry. I just think he's the greatest.
He is he's a true national treasure.
That is quite the outfit there, Grapes. I've got to tell you, that's something.
That's insane.
I remember when CBC did a TV movie that was like a biographical film of Don Cherry.
Oh.
And, you'll never guess what they called it.
What?
Grapes
Sour
of Wrath.
Grapes?
Grapes of Wrath.
Tell me that's on YouTube somewhere and I can watch it.
I have no idea.
I will look.
I didn't even bother watching the original one when it was airing on CBC. And then I was surprised to see that they were making like a sequel to it, because I didn't know anyone else who watched it either.
All right. Yeah. So we got the Rangers.
By the way, just Google Don Cherry suits and it's a sight to behold.
Oh, it's probably like taking acid. Oh.
This one needs to be, before we move on, I just need to share this one. This is special. He should wear this one more often.
Oh, my God. That's great.
Oh, it's just gold lights.
It's just gold lights all over his white jacket.
Yeah, white. See, but that's what I mean. Like, that's a white suit, but it looks like the gold lights are just subliminated onto the fabric.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one literally looks like someone ran a tire on a paint puddle and like.
I will use here. I'm gonna save this as we'll use this for the picture for the show this week. So on the Tumblr and the board, so you'll know, like, what we're talking about.
I don't get it. Like, some songs in suits, I get it. This one just made.
Well, I think that he's just kind of run out of outrageous ideas at this point, and I guess this is just the next logical step. I don't know.
Does he, like, in the off season, does he just set up like a chart and like go and say, okay, we need, what suit are we going to put for this day, and like plan it out ahead of time?
I don't know.
To get all these things on order? Because that's the only thing that would.
I don't know, but
he sort of said.
I've loved the guy since all the way back in my days in Toledo on CBC, so yeah.
By the way, if you Google Don Cherry suits, at least 75% of the pictures are him with Ron McClain, who is giving him a look of like befuddled confusion.
Well, I combine what he's wearing with what he says, and how else are you going to look at the guy?
It's a perfect pairing. Like, Ron McClain and Don Cherry could you know, analyze hockey till the day we're all dead. I'd be perfectly fine with that. It's fantastic.
Yes, I agree completely. Okay, so we got Rangers, we got Caps, we got Ducks, yep, and we got Blues, right?
I just picked Edmonton, but right. I'm not comfortable about any of that. So, yeah.
All right.
I don't know.
I think we can wrap it up.
Yeah, I mean, not that we would ever run out of the boredom of seeing another Rangers-Caps series, but that looks like if that's in the possibilities again.
Oh, God.
They've only played each other like 9 times in the last 9 years.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I picked Washington, but let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Oh, yeah, I know. We could very easily get Penguins-Rangers. By the way, the Penguins beat the Rangers in 5 games last year, so that would be...
Yeah, I don't see this Rangers team. I don't know, man. I mean, I think after getting past Montreal, which I'm surprised they did.
Yeah, they got a good luck at the draw.
Yeah, they really did. Yeah.
They're going to get to the conference final by sheer luck.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's one of those things, again, where, like, you look at the Blue Jackets, and it's like, yeah, we want to be as good as we are in the regular season, but do you really? If you're in the Metro Division, I think you'd be okay at a certain point, like, we're just going to settle into this number one wild card spot and be okay.
Yeah. It's tough, but it should be fun, though. I mean, despite the sweeps and, you know, a couple of series are pretty lopsided, I think we had some pretty good hockey in the first round.
Yeah. I thought so, too. First round is always my favorite because there's so many games going on.
Yeah.
And you're flipping back and forth between the channels. Even now, it settles down where you're going to get 2 games a night and they're going to be staggered. They're going to be able to watch it all, so it's fine. But in the previous round, where you have 4 games a night, and because of the way the time zones all work out, you have like 3 games going on at once, and you're constantly switching. It's fun. It's great.
Yes, it is. It's great. And next week, because I think they'll probably be about halfway through the first series, maybe we'll talk a little bit of NBA next week.
What?
Just like, our norm, not like seriously, like the way we talk NBA.
I'm surprised.
I'll put the Globetrotters music on, and we'll like ask who's playing on what teams and stuff.
I do remember seeing tale that a number one seed could be in danger of falling.
Okay, well, see, there's something we can look at and see who they're talking about.
Who's number one seed?
Boston in the East, right?
Yeah, Boston lost the first 2 games to Chicago, right?
Oh, that's
they came
right.
Back. It's tied. It's tied.
Oh, it's tied now? Well, yeah. Shows what I know.
Yeah, I think Mike's Raptors were beating up on, I believe it was the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh, they're not beating up on them. They won tonight, but they're only leading 3-2.
Oh, okay. Well, I meant tonight's game, not overall. Yeah, tonight's game.
Yeah. Right. So it's been go Raptors, I guess. We the North.
Hey, while I'm thinking about it, I think the NFL draft is Thursday, isn't it?
Oh, is it really?
But I don't want to know. The only thing I want to talk about with the draft, the Browns have the number one pick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a lot of talk around here. They're going to take Mitchell Trubisky at number one, even though he's probably at best a late first round pick. So I want to know, what do you guys think? Do they? Because I think that if they do that, they are absolute idiots.
So they are idiots. I actually read an article about this today, funnily enough. It's apparently they were talking – it was an article about how this relates to the Johnny Manziel pick. Basically, the GM Banner, I think his last name was, who was the GM of the Browns up until February before the draft, did a story where he was like, yeah, when I was fired, we didn't even have Manziel on our draft board.
Mm.
So from between February and April, Manziel suddenly showed up, and the speculation is that the owner basically said, you're drafting this guy.
I fear that's what's going to happen this year, too.
Well, that's what they're saying is happening. Basically, all the football guys running the team say, we're not going to take this guy. But, like, ownership has apparently been the one making rumblings, telling them they need to do it.
Well, I'd get it if he were a legitimate franchise quarterback, but I don't think he is. Mm-hmm. I just want predictions. Do they blow the pick completely, or do they do the smart thing?
If the Browns were truly a team that has turned itself around and knows what it wants,
yep,
or it is doing the right things, honestly, they should trade the pick.
Uh-huh. I agree.
Because the guy that's the universal number one everywhere else is Myles Garrett, the defensive end from Texas A&M.
Yep.
I don't know how I feel about picking DN's number one. It can be an impact position, but is it a number one overall pick type impact?
I couldn't agree more. And here's what I'm thinking. If you really are in the position where you want to turn things around, you're going to start doing the right things, trade that pick, because I think you can get good defensive talent even, you know, throughout the first round, into the second round. There's nothing in this draft that I think is worth a number one overall pick.
And I think the other thing, too, is that haven't they been stockpiling picks over the last few years? Don't they have a bunch?
They've got a bunch, and they've got a ton of salary cap space.
So here's the thing, too. If you have that many picks, you either trade the pick or you do pick Myles Garrett, because he's the number one pick. Mm-hmm. And if you really want Trubisky or a quarterback of his caliber, you have plenty of other opportunities to do it or trade up to do it.
Well, here's the way I look at it. Okay.
Be smart.
Right. Just be smart because I don't care. I don't care if freaking the combination of Joe Montana and Tom Brady is sitting there at the top of that draft pool right now. If you don't have an offensive line or any kind of players like running back, it doesn't matter. And you've got to have all that first. And there's always going to be another Mitchell Trubisky down the road. Build the rest of the team. And you know what? Cody Kessler will get a lot better if he's not laying on his back half the time. I'm not saying he'll win a Super Bowl or anything, but he'll be competent. And wait until you can get the right guy. That's what they need to do.
That's the conversation that people are having right now with the Rams. Like, I know that firsthand. Jared Goff, despite, you know, what we think of him mentally, he may actually end up being okay, but we don't know because he was on his back all year.
Mm-hmm.
He has no offensive line. He has no one to throw to. Like, the Rams are going to focus on drafting linemen and receivers, because if they don't, they're never going to know what they have.
Well, that's the thing. You can't let your fan base dictate your draft, which is what the Browns have been doing for too many years around here. They want to make it exciting, make a big splash. That's all great, but you're not building a team. You've got to just stay focused, build the foundation first, and because an average quarterback can become pretty good if he's not getting killed every week.
Right.
Goff's a perfect example of that.
In relativity to everything else the Browns have done, to be perfectly blunt, the smart thing for the Browns to do is the obvious thing. Like, don't think too hard about it.
No.
Honestly, like, if you know, people think to make the smart pick, you have to do some thinking. In the Browns' case, don't think.
Don't think.
Pick the best player available.
Right, exactly.
Just do it. Like, you've
signed.
If the best player available happens to be a quarterback at that slot, do it. If it happens to be a receiver, do it. You just need talented players in that organization.
Right, and that's what they've got. I don't know.
Start building,
exactly. Because, you know, Alex Smith
gets the Chiefs to the playoffs every year. And let's be honest, he's not an elite quarterback, but he's got enough around him to get the job done. So that's the way you got to look at it. But anyway,
yep.
All right, that's going to do it, I guess. So you know, you can follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports. You can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and YouTube. Find us on Facebook, and you can listen to all the old episodes on Tumblr, basicallysports.tumblr, something or another. Anyway, and with that, I'm going to say go Rangers, go Blues, and I'll give Zach a go Ducks.
Go Ducks, and as a special treat, by the way, by next week, I picked up a book yesterday. Someone took all the Star Wars trilogy, all six movies.
Oh,
wrote them down, but translated them into Shakespearean writing.
Oh,
and wrote them I've seen those.
I picked up The Empire Strikes Back yesterday, and it is quality.
Well, you've got to bring it next week, and we will have to do readings from it.
Yes.
Masterpiece Theater.
Yes.
It's pretty good. And some of the prequel lines are better, and I took pictures of the pages at the store so I could have them. So I have those. But we'll see what I can find here over the next week of reading it.
All righty. Mike, any final thoughts?
Go Ducks.
Go Ducks. Oh, and go Caps, too, I guess. I don't know. Fuck it. Go everybody.
And go, you know, hockey.
Entertain me with good hockey.
Go Leafs go still. Just go Leafs.
Go Leafs. Ducks.
All right. We'll see you all next time.
See ya.
The second half of tonight's telecast has been brought to you by Imperial Oil Limited and Esso dealers, agents, and distributors serving your community. Tune in again next week.